Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, June 2nd, 2015. And with me today, I feel like it's been a while since we've had a chance to talk on a show, Brian. There's a spoiler for you. It's Brian Chaffin.
Yeah, look at that. It's me.
Woo. And Kelly Gumond, how are you, Kelly?
I'm good. I'm super excited today because I don't know if you've heard, but Brian's on the show today.
He is. I got a memo. Yep. And then I spoiled it for everyone by saying Brian's on the show. So. Yeah, sorry about the spoilers, people. Anyhow, it's great to have both of you here, and I wanted to start off with a thing you wrote yesterday, Brian. By thing, I mean a piece, and by piece, I mean an editorial, where you talked about how Asus is innovating in the smartwatch space. What's up with that?
They have put out, you know, this company, man. This company, they've always been one of the Apple trash talkers. They've always been like, you know, oh, we're going to beat the iPad with this. We're going to be like, our netbooks are going to be like the bee's knees. They have this long and proud, I assume, history of either talking about how badly they're going to beat Apple in the marketplace, or even just, you know, just dismissing Apple as a competitor entirely. And you know, we all know how that's actually worked out. And this time around, they didn't specifically name Apple, but it was funny to me that they announced the ZenWatch 2, which is the sequel to the original ZenWatch, I guess, an Android Wear device. And it looks mostly like the original ZenWatch with the addition of a metal watch crown. And that's in quotes there. And the metal watch crown is an on-off button. They called it a new way of interacting with your device, which is true, I guess, if you count turning it on and off as an interaction. I don't know. It's interesting to me because, you know, Apple has shown us the light with Apple Watch. You know, Apple Watch is the first successful wearable computing device in the marketplace. And Apple did it through a number of things. For one thing, you know, coming up with new interface paradigms, coming up with new ways of actually interacting with your smartwatch, i.e., the digital crown, as Apple calls it, which serves a navigation function as well as just having a button feature for navigation, and also by exploring the world of fashion with all of these different straps and these different case configurations and case materials and case colors, and turning it into, you know, a fashion statement, or tapping into the idea of jewelry to make wearable computing approachable and usable. And Asus is copying that, which is good. I mean, everybody should. Apple, now that Apple has shown us that, all of Apple's competitors should copy the company on this front. Mm-hmm. I mean, they should, because I mean, this is not like copying a gesture or some kind of user interface thing that Apple has come up with. This is in hindsight, obvious thing that everybody else should do.
Isn't it interesting how often that happens? In hindsight, something Apple has done should have been obvious to everyone else.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll be honest, it certainly wasn't obvious to me until Apple showed us the way. But this idea of like, oh yeah, the digital, oh, the crown, we should do something with a watch crown. That's a great idea. Make it an on-off switch. Ah, victory. Yay.
Hooray for Asus.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It's just lame. It's just lame. But they did do a good job. They actually have some interesting looking straps. I think they may possibly have even copied Apple in the magnetic clasp area of one of their straps. I'm not really sure about that, but they've got a Milanese material, a metal bracelet that's mm-hmm. similar to the fine mesh of the Milanese loop that Apple does, which is, as I've said on other shows, is similar to the Breitling strap. They've got one of those. They've got different colors. They've got different materials. They have nice looking buckles. They actually did a pretty good job on that. I think the ZenWatch 2 looks good. It's a good looking device, but at the end of the day, it's just another Android device, and this metal watch crown, which is just such a bad name.
Yes, it is. Now, the thing is, I'm expecting a lot of companies will now put a crown on their watches.
Mm-hmm.
And here we go. Asus is among the first to make that happen. And I'm betting a lot of these companies are going to put them on simply to put them on, which I believe is exactly what Asus did.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, I'm not sure. Does anyone here know if Apple has a patent on using the digital crown to scroll through menus?
Off the top of my head, I do not know.
I do not know. I haven't seen anything to that degree. It's actually fascinating to me that I mean, I guess they just haven't had enough time because it's not support for this. For that idea is not built into Android Wear.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Someone would have to fork Android to add that feature in.
You don't have to necessarily fork it. You could just add your own layer.
Well, true. You can add your own layer, but it seems the modus operandi is, we want to add a new feature. Let's fork Android.
Yeah, that tends to be the case. That's Kindle. All the Kindle stuff from Amazon is all running on a mutation of... an eventual mutation of Android, and I think there's something else that I'm misremembering that is also running Android that you wouldn't expect it to be.
Some Chinese companies have forked Android, but what Samsung done is Samsung done. That's
kind of funny, Brian.
Kind of funny. What Samsung has done is not a fork. For instance, what HTC has done is not a fork. So anyway, one way or another, unless Apple does have it protected by a patent, and probably even then, a crown that can be used to scroll through navigation choices will be coming to an Android device at some point. That's pretty inevitable. It's not pretty inevitable. It's inevitable.
Yeah, yeah. If it's pretty inevitable, it's probably not inevitable. Just inevitable is an all the way thing.
Yeah, mostly
pedantic.
Mostly.
This, Brian, is why I love you. Yeah. So, listeners, if you come across watches that are clearly ripping off Apple Watch features, but in a poor way, let me know, because I'm really curious to see how quickly all these devices show up. And I know you people are out looking for this stuff too. So let me know when you come up with something.
There's one more thing. I didn't actually mention this in my written piece, but the ZenWatch 2 is also described as a companion device. So that may be something that Android is getting on board with, is just owning up to the fact that smartwatches need to be paired with a smartphone to be as useful as they can be.
That's interesting. Yeah. Huh. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I bet you're right. I bet this is a new trend, and we'll start seeing this happening with more and more Android watches. Yeah. So the other thing I wanted to take a look at today, Kelly, you had a chance to go hands-on with Google Photos.
I did.
And I'm really curious what you think.
So I like it, first of all. And one of the things that is notable about it to me is that it's cross-platform. So let me back up a little bit. This was announced this last week at Google I/O, which is the Android version of the Worldwide Developers Conference that's coming next week for Apple people. And the reason this was interesting to me was because day and date of when it was released, they said during the keynote that they were giving, they talked about it and said, this is actually available for Android devices and iOS devices today. So there's also a web interface if you want to upload things from your computer, and it doesn't matter what computer, which I thought was kind of handy. So if you are somebody who maybe has an Android phone for reasons, or you have an iPhone and an iPad and a Windows machine because reasons, then you actually are going to be able to use this, where with something like iCloud Photo Library, you're not necessarily going to have that opportunity. And some of the other cloud storage options you have are attractive, but they're cloud storage that you could put pictures on. They're not necessarily tailored toward being something that will support your pictures. So the nice thing about it is, if you allow for compression, that file compression, you have two options when you go to upload your images to this Google Photos system. And the first of them is unlimited, and you get unlimited space if you will allow for some file compression. And that file compression doesn't come into play unless your images are larger than 16 megapixel. So if you primarily want this for your phone, you're set for a long time, because it's going to be many iPhones before we get a 16 megapixel camera. And then the other option you have is everything gets uploaded at original resolution, regardless of file size or regardless of the dimensions in the image, if you will allow it to be tied to the storage that you have for Gmail and Google Drive and your other sorts of accounts. And the upload is pretty straightforward. You get a little thumbnail. The thumbnail is not necessarily the most accurate of thumbnails. So most of mine, it seemed to take the top left corner, regardless of whether or not that was part of the action of the photo or not. And then that, you can...
That's incredibly lame, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, it kind of is.
I mean, because thumbnails are not like, you know, some kind of voodoo at this point.
It's only in the progress bar. When you look at the thumbnails the rest of the time, you get something that represents the image. So this was only in the little progress in the lower left-hand corner as I uploaded a bunch of images.
Okay, and now, then, but this, the whole interface, it's all a web interface.
Yes. Well, yes, there's a specific iOS app, but it's basic. It appears as though it's just a web wrapper, a wrapper for a web view. The other nice thing about it is that you don't have to log into anything special. You don't have to worry about whether or not the person that you want to share these with has a Google account. So I sent an email over to Jeff and said, hey, check out my photo album. And Jeff didn't have to do anything to go click on it. It's just a link. And then that album gets marked as a shared album when you are viewing your images.
And I got to see your Hello Kitty socks.
Yeah. So there's that. And then the other thing that was interesting to me about it is that in the past, I have uploaded images to different photo services and had the day I uploaded the image become the date of the photo. And that's not true. In a lot of cases, that's not true. So particularly if you're investing in something new and you need to sort of step back and start uploading stuff from a month ago, a year ago, a decade ago, once you're uploading those images, then they shouldn't all be date stamped for today. And so they automatically fall back on your timeline as far back as however, you know, whatever the date is on the image. So if you have pictures that are 10 or 15 years old, or you've structured metadata correctly and you've scanned a bunch of old family photos, even, you know, that go back to the 1950s or the early 1900s, those will show up in your timeline with the right date information on them, which is super cool. The other nice thing about this is, if what is really sort of making you groan about your photo storage is the fact that you will have to go tag everything again, and you are only about 1% of the way through doing that in iPhoto or Aperture or whatever already, because most people don't really have a good system for that. You don't need it. The image they used in the demonstration in the Google keynote was actually kind of interesting. The guy went to his photo roll or to his photo page and said, snowstorm in Toronto. And Google knew which pictures were taken near Toronto that had snow in them, and then it showed him the picture he was looking for. Because a lot of times you know what the picture is you're looking for, but you may not necessarily know what the file name was or what sort of tags you put on it at the time, because a lot of people's tagging system has evolved, and sometimes people don't go back and redo all of those photos that they've tagged already. So you don't have to do any of that. Somehow Google is managing that knowledge for you. And
that's pretty cool.
It's actually very, very cool. I know some other people who have added larger numbers of photos than I have. So they end up with different items. Like, you'll get a food section that shows all the times you took pictures of your food. And, if you live in Portland and you have a lot of pictures of beer, you may have a beer section as one of the things that it shows you is in the list of stuff, because it shows you what it thinks the item is, and then it shows you what the images are that it thinks match up with that item, and you have to have a certain amount of them, and then it shows up in this sort of things view. So you can get food and landscapes and cars and Lego and action figures and theme parks and roller coasters and, you know, all kinds of different stuff if you have a significant number of pictures that contain those items. And it just makes it easier to get your stuff back out again. And part of the reason that people want to invest in things like iPhoto and Aperture and invest that sort of time and that effort into them is to be able to get that stuff back out again later. So it actually looks really cool. And since I'm not entirely convinced that even my DSLR will take a 16 megapixel photo, I think the unlimited is super nice for me. And as soon as I can get someone to finally admit to me what it is that Google is actually doing with this information, so much the better. For right now, it seems like it might just be a good machine learning exercise for Google. And you know, what you get out of it is all of that time you would have spent recognizing faces and having to tag things with location information and the date it was taken and who's in the picture and why you were taking it and what was going on. You don't have to do any of that anymore. You can just go, I want that picture from Aunt Lucille's birthday party, and there it will be.
So do you think this is a reasonable alternative for the average person to iCloud Photo Library?
Absolutely.
And it's free, as long as you don't need the to address the caveats, like 16 megapixel images.
Right. It will also store video. And the other thing that to me was interesting as features go is that this is a really easy way to have stuff available in the cloud, which I think is kind of handy. Obviously, you should have all of those images backed up somewhere else anyway, so it shouldn't really matter if Google wants to compress those larger photos, because you should have that uncompressed original living somewhere else that gets backed up, and that backup gets backed up. You know, I mean, obviously, you don't want to lose that original data, but to have all that stuff available to you online, or even because you want to share them with other people. Like, a lot of people live in different places than their families now, and being able to instantly share that album from today of all of the pictures of the stuff I did today with my mom, who lives in Las Vegas, that seems like a thing that would be, you know, a lot easier to do. And particularly if you don't have to walk people through how to log in or go to this service or whatever, they get an email that has a link in it. Jeff, you had one.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't forget the best feature. The number one feature is that by doing this, you will be facilitating Google adding everything that you take a picture of to your advertising profile too.
This is true.
This is super important. You know, you wouldn't want Google to actually be missing out on any aspect of your life for them to profit from.
Now, see, that makes sense. Now I understand what it is they're getting out of it. I understand why Google wants access to my email. I understand why Google's trying to build their own Facebook with Google Plus, and it's to collect information about everybody. But now that you put it like that, that makes more sense. So
it also makes some of the weird ads I've started getting totally clear now. Yeah.
You're going to have to leave it at that, because this is a family show.
That's how I keep mystery in our relationship.
It is indeed.
Yep. Hey, we're about out of time. So we're going to have to wrap up. Wow, it's been great having both of you on the show today.
Thank you kindly.
Thank you very much.
And listeners, it's great to have you here with us too. And yeah, and when you start seeing I'll call them the Apple Watch knockoffs, let me know, because I'm really curious to see what these other companies are up to. And head over to the iTunes store and rate the show for me, please, because it's always great getting your feedback. And when you rate the show at the iTunes store, it makes it easier for other people to find and join in on the fun too. So thanks everyone, and we'll see you again tomorrow.